Chapter 34. The last day of the story is dated just subsequent to that point in the development of the seasons, when country people go to bed among nearly naked trees, are lulled to sleep by a fall of rain, and awake next morning among green ones, when the landscape appears embarrassed with the sudden weight and brilliancy of its leaves, when the nightjar comes and strikes up for the summer his tune of one note, when the apple trees have bloomed, and the roads and orchard grass become spotted with fallen petals, when the faces of the delicate flowers are darkened, and their heads weighed down by the throng of honeybees, which increase their humming till humming is too mild a term for the all-pervading sound, and when cuckoos, blackbirds, and sparrows, that have hitherto been merry and respectful neighbors, become noisy and persistent intimates. The exterior of Geoffrey Day's house in Yalberry Wood appeared exactly as was usual at that season, but a frantic barking of the dogs at the back told of unwonted movements somewhere within. Inside the door the eyes beheld a gathering, which was a rarity indeed for the dwelling of the solitary wood steward and keeper. About the room were sitting and standing, in various gnarled attitudes, our old acquaintance, grandfathers James and William, the tranter, Mr. Penny, two or three children, including Jimmy and Charlie, besides three or four country ladies and gentlemen from a greater distance who do not require any distinction by name. Geoffrey was seen and heard stamping about the outhouse, and among the bushes of the garden, attending to details of daily routine before the proper time arrived for their performance, in order that they might be off his hands for the day. He appeared with his shirt sleeves rolled up, his best new nether garments, in which he had arrayed himself that morning, being temporarily disguised under a weekday apron, whilst these proceedings were in operation. He occasionally glanced at the hives in passing, to see if his wife's bees were swarming, ultimately rolling down his shirt sleeves and going indoors, talking to Tranter Dewey, whilst buttoning the wristbands, to save time, next going upstairs for his best waistcoat, and coming down again, to make another remark whilst buttoning that, during the time looking fixedly in the Tranter's face, as if he were a looking glass. The furniture had undergone attenuation to an alarming extent, every duplicate piece having been removed, including the clock by Thomas Wood, Ezekiel Saunders being at last left sole referee in matters of time. Fancy was stationary upstairs, receiving her layers of clothes and adornments, and answering by short fragments of laughter which had more fidgetiness than mirth in them, remarks that were made from time to time by Mrs. Dewey and Mrs. Penny, who were assisting her at the toilet, Mrs. Day having pleaded a queerness in her head as a reason for shutting herself up in an inner bedroom for the whole morning. Mrs. Penny appeared with 9 corkscrew curls on each side of her temples, and a back comb stuck upon her crown like a castle on a steep. The conversation just now going on was concerning the banns, the last publication of which had been on the Sunday previous. And how did they sound? Fancy subtly inquired. Very beautiful indeed, said Mrs. Penny. Never heard any sound better. But how? Oh, so natural and elegant, didn't they, Reuben, she cried, through the chinks of the unsailed floor, to the tranter downstairs. What's that? Said the tranter, looking up inquiringly at the floor above him for an answer. Didn't Dick and Fancy sound well when they were called home in church last Sunday? Came downwards again in Mrs. Penny's voice. Eh, that they did, my sonnies, especially the first time. There was a terrible whispering piece of work in the congregation, wasn't there, neighbor Penny? Said the tranter, taking up the thread of conversation on his own account, and, in order to be heard in the room above, speaking very loud to Mr. Penny, who sat at the distance of 3 feet from him, or rather less. I never can mind seeing such a whispering as there was, said Mr. Penny, also loudly, to the room above. And he such sorrowful envy on the maidens' faces. Really, I never did see such envy as there was. Fancy's lineaments varied in innumerable little flushes, and her heart palpitated innumerable little tremors of pleasure. But perhaps, she said, with assumed indifference, it was only because no religion was going on just then? Oh, no, nothing to do with that. It was because of your high standing in the parish. It was just as if they had one, and all caught Dick kissing and calling me to death, wasn't it, Mrs. Dewey? Eh, that was. How people will talk about one's doings, Fancy exclaimed. Well, if you make songs about yourself, my dear, you can't blame other people for singing them. Mercy me, how shall I go through it? Said the young lady again, but merely to those in the bedroom, with a breathing of a kind between a sigh and a pant, round shining eyes, and warm face. Oh, you'll get through it well enough, child, said Mrs. Dewey placidly. The edge of the performances took off at the calling home, and when once you get up to the chancel and oh the church, you feel as saucy as you please. I'm sure I felt as brave as a soldier all through the deed, though of course I dropped my face and looked modest, as was becoming to a maid. Mind you do that, Fancy. And I walked into the church as quiet as a lamb, I'm sure, subjoined Mrs. Penny. Here, you see Penny is such a little small man, but certainly, I was flurried in the inside o' me. Well, thinks I, 'tis to be, and here goes. And do you do the same? Say, 'tis to be, and here goes. Apostrophe, is there such wonderful virtue in 'tis to be, and here goes? Apostrophe inquired Fancy. Wonderful. 'Twill carry a body through it all from wedding to churching, if you only let it out with spirit enough. Very well, then, said Fancy, blushing. 'Tis to be, and here goes. That's a girl for a husband, said Mrs. Dewey. I do hope he'll come in time, continued the bride-elect, inventing a new cause of affright, now that the other was demolished. 'Twould be a thousand pities, if he didn't come, now you be so brave, said Mrs. Penny. Grandfather James, having overheard some of these remarks, said downstairs with mischievous loudness of known some would-be weddings, when the men didn't come. They've happened not to come, before now, certainly, said Mr. Penny, cleaning one of the glasses of his spectacles. Oh, do hear what they are saying downstairs, whispered Fancy. Hush, hush. She listened. They have, haven't they, Jeffrey? Continued Grandfather James, as Jeffrey entered. Have what? Said Jeffrey. The men have been known not to come. That they have, said the keeper. Eh, I've known times when the wedding had to be put off through his not appearing, being tired of the woman. And another case I knowed, was when the man was catched in a man-trap crossing Oakers Wood, and the 3 months had run out before he got well, and the banns had to be published over again. How horrible, said Fancy. They only say it on purpose to tease, my dear, said Mrs. Dewey. 'Tis quite sad to think what wretched shifts poor maids have been put to, came again from downstairs. He should hear Clerk Wilkins, my brother-in-law, tell his experiences in marrying couples these last 30 years. Sometimes one thing, sometimes another, 'tis quite heart-rending enough to make your hair stand on end. Those things don't happen very often, I know, said Fancy, with smoldering uneasiness. Well, really 'tis time Dick was here, said the tranter. Don't keep on at me so, Grandfather James and Mr. Dewey, and all you down there. Fancy broke out, unable to endure any longer. I'm sure I shall die, or do something, if you do. Never you hearken to these old chaps, Miss Day, cried Nat Calcombe, the best man, who had just entered, and threw his voice upward through the chinks of the floor as the others had done. 'Tis all right. Dick's coming on like a wild feller. He'll be here in a minute. The hive obeys his mother guided and for his new garden swarmed just as he was starting, and he said, I can't afford to lose a stock obeys. No, that I can't, though I fain would, and Fancy wouldn't wish it on any account. So he just stopped to ting to him and shake him. A genuine wise man, said Jeffrey. To be sure, what a day's work we had yesterday. Mr. Calcombe continued, lowering his voice, as if it were not necessary any longer to include those in the room above among his audience, and selecting a remote corner of his best clean handkerchief for wiping his face. To be sure. Thing so heavy, I suppose, said Jeffrey, as if reading through the chimney window from the far end of the vista. Hey, said Nat, looking round the room at points from which furniture had been removed. And he so awkward to carry to. 'Twas ather and across Dick's garden, in and out Dick's door, up and down Dick's stairs, round and round Dick's chambers till legs were worn to stumps. And Dick is so particular too. And the stores of victuals and drink that lad has laid in. Why, 'tis enough for Noah's Ark. I'm sure I never wish to see a choicer half dozen of hams than he's got there in his chimney, and the cider I tasted was a very pretty drop, indeed. None could desire a prettier cider. They be for the love and the stall docks both. Ah, the greedy martels, said Grandfather James. Well, maybe they be. Surely, says I, that couple between them have heaped up so much furniture and victuals that anybody would think they were going to take hold the big end of married life first, and begin why a grown-up family. Ah, what a bath of heat we two chaps were in, to be sure, a getting that furniture in order. I do so wish the room below was sailed, said Fancy, as the dressing went on. We can hear all they say and do down there. Hark! Who's that? Exclaimed a small pupil teacher, who also assisted this morning, to her great delight. She ran halfway down the stairs, and peeped round the banister. Comma, you should, she exclaimed, scrambling up to the room again. What? Said Fancy. See the bridesmaids. They've just a come. 'Tis wonderful, really. 'Tis wonderful how muslin can be brought to it. There, they don't look a bit like themselves, but like some very rich sisters o' theirs, that nobody knew they had. Make 'em come up to me, make 'em come up, cried Fancy ecstatically, and the four damsels appointed, namely, Miss Susan Dewey, Miss Bessie Dewey, Miss Vashti Sniff, and Miss Mercy on me, surged upstairs, and floated along the passage. I wish Dick would come, was again the burden of Fancy. The same instant a small twig and flower from the creeper outside the door flew in at the open window, and a masculine voice said, Ready, Fancy dearest? There he is, cried Fancy, tittering spasmodically, and breathing as it were for the first time that morning. The bridesmaids crowded to the window, and turned their heads in the direction pointed out, at which motion eight earrings all swung as one. Not looking at Dick, because they particularly wanted to see him, but with an important sense of their duty as obedient ministers of the will of that apotheosis being the bride. He looks very taking, said Miss Vashti Sniff, a young lady who blushed cream color and wore yellow bonnet ribbons. Dick was advancing to the door in a painfully new coat of shining cloth, primrose-colored waistcoat, hat of the same painful style of newness, and with an extra quantity of whiskers shaved off his face, and hair cut to an unwonted shortness in honor of the occasion. Now, I'll run down, said Fancy, looking at herself over her shoulder in the glass, and flitting off. Oh, Dick, she exclaimed, I am so glad you are come. I knew you would, of course, but I thought, oh, if you shouldn't. Not come, Fancy. Head or wet, blow or snow, here come I today. Why, what's possessing your little soul? You never used to mind such things a bit. Ah, Mr. Dick, I hadn't hoisted my colors and committed myself then, said Fancy. 'Tis a pity I can't marry the whole five of ye, said Dick, surveying them all round. He, laughed the four bridesmaids. And Fancy privately touched Dick, and smoothed him down behind his shoulder, as if to assure herself that he was there in flesh and blood as her own property. Well, whoever would have thought such a thing? Said Dick, taking off his hat, sinking into a chair, and turning to the elder members of the company. The latter arranged their eyes and lips, to signify that in their opinion nobody could have thought such a thing, whatever it was. that my bees should swarm just then, of all times and seasons. Continued Dick, throwing a comprehensive glance like a net over the whole auditory. And it is a fine swarm too. I haven't seen such a fine swarm for these 10 years. A excellent sign, said Mrs. Penny, from the depths of experience. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.